All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, Week 15 edition of the show, as the Bucks are now three games away from ending the regular season. Any one of them with a win would result in a winning season for the Bucks, but of course, we already had that penciled in our minds. What we're looking for is a playoff berth, and the NFC South, not completely mathematically eliminated, but all but decided. So now we turn our sights to the wild card. The Bucks took a huge step this past Sunday, getting by the Vikings 26-14. And they do technically have a chance to clinch a playoff berth this weekend, although it's very unlikely. Here's what we're looking for. Here's what I'm looking for. You know, three games to go against two teams, one that you'll play twice, a division rival in Atlanta, and then again in Tampa in Week 17, sandwiched around a game in Detroit in Week 16. Bucks should win that Detroit game. At worst, Bucks should split with the Falcons, and they really should sweep them. But if, you know, it's a division rival, again, that's tough to beat them twice in 3 weeks. If they split with Atlanta and beat Detroit and finish 10-6, I mean, if I offered you that right now, I guess you'd take it. But no less than that, for sure. And hopefully they get the 5 seed and go on the road against whoever the NFC East winner is, but it's also very possible, if not likely, they'd be the 6 seed under that scenario and have to go play a little bit more difficult. It could be, there's a billion teams it could still be. Point is, we're in TCB mode right now, take care of business mode. It's not about how pretty it looks or this and that, and this isn't college football. We don't have to impress a committee. Just get the wins and get the hell out of there. And that's what the Bucks did on Sunday against the Vikings. We're going to talk about that game today. We'll look ahead to the Atlanta game. You know, the Bucks definitely got some help. I mean, Minnesota missed 3 field goals. They left points on the field. They made other mistakes. And I had a couple buddies texting me, be like, oh, dude, if we'd played anybody else this weekend, we would have gotten our asses kicked, man. I don't care about that. That doesn't matter. This isn't college football. Your job's to win every week. If you win, there's standings, you get a win instead of a loss, and that's it. It's all very black and white. Nobody's actually evaluating anything by sight, and so the Bucks did what they had to do. And so now we have the chance to do that again on Saturday or on Sunday. It's the Falcons. It's on the road. If they look bad and they win, or if they aren't as convincing as we'd like them to be, whatever. Just get your 10 wins or 11 wins, and then it'll start getting real in the playoffs. And so, as we get ready for today's show today, that'll be kind of the theme. Now, I want to talk both about the Vikings game and the Falcons game. The Free Stretch, as it always is brought to you by our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to them, you have a chance, if you're looking for a vehicle, to get a better deal, not just on the actual price or whatever you come to, but on what you get with your vehicle, because it's more than just buying a car. You get an unlimited nationwide lifetime warranty if you go to Bill Curry Ford, which is, as a driver who hates going to the mechanic and spending a ton of money, which is every driver, the peace of mind of that is bigger than almost anything else to me. So you can go to Bill Curry Ford a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now after you buy the car, all right? And if you have engine trouble, you're covered under the warranty. You go to the service center, they will take care of you. That's on top of the first year of all your oil changes and everything is complimentary at the service center. Roadside assistance for 10 years. You get all these things along with a quality vehicle when you go to Bill Curry Ford. So check them out on the website if you want, BillCurryFord.com. It's spelled C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Or, like I always tell you, go see it in person. Go to the big showroom. Go out there on the lot. You can see everything online, but sometimes you want to walk right next to that car and look at it. And you can do that even if you don't want to go in person with COVID going on. They will bring you the car to your home or office to test drive. They will bring it to you if you buy it. So either way, you're covered. But I encourage you all strongly to check them out, BillCurryFord.com, or go see them a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry. So, this week, and I don't follow Skip Bayless on Twitter, but I saw a couple people retweeting it, and just the general talk after the Bucks win. And it's amazing. I mean, this is football. We talk about this all the time, but this is being a football fan. It's the most reactionary of all the sports because you play only once a week. So whatever that last game is, people really latch on to it, and that's kind of where the fan base's mentality is psychologically. It's whatever happened in the last game. Bucks just lost 3 out of 4. It didn't look that good. And then they go out there and they get the win against Minnesota, who's a 500 team and who was 1-5 at one point. And all of a sudden, everybody's feeling great again. We're talking about deep playoff runs again. And I'm not poo-pooing any of that, but you know, Skip Bayless, the reason I brought him up, somebody retweeted Skip Bayless saying, hey, are the Bucks one of the elite teams in the NFC? Can they make a deep playoff run? We're going to be talking about it next on whatever the hell the show is called. I don't watch any of that stuff. So my point is people want to freak out every time the Bucks lose a game or two. And every time they win, everybody starts making their plans for deep into January and even February all over again. And I'm here to tell you, like I've been telling you for a while now, Bucks are kind of just in the middle of those two things. They're a good team. They're definitely above average team. They're definitely one of the better teams in the National Football League. They don't strike me as a team on that top tier. And that doesn't mean they can't do it. We've seen wild card teams do it before. We've seen 10-6 New York Giants teams beat 18-0 New England Patriots teams. I remember the Steelers when they made their Super Bowl run, not the one they won in Tampa, but the one they won in Detroit, like I think it was 2005, where I think they were the same as the Bucks. They were 7-5. Then they reeled off 4 in a row to end the season at 11-5, kept on winning as a wild card throughout the playoffs. They even wore their white jerseys that Super Bowl, even though they were the home team because they had been playing on the road, playing as the wild card team. They wanted to keep that mojo. And so it could absolutely be done. And Larry Foote, who's a coach on the Bucks staff now, I think was talking to the guys about that because he was with that Steelers team. So there's a lot of possibilities. But if you look at what the Bucks have done, they are now 8-5. They are 7-1 against everybody in the league that isn't leading a division. And they're 1-4 against the division leaders. Two losses to the Saints, a loss to the Rams, a loss to the Chiefs, and their signature win this year, a blowout win of the Packers, who are now very possibly going to be the number one overall seed in the NFC. So, and that game still remains, and obviously it's easy to point to your best game and say, oh, well, that's the Buccaneers I think they can be, because every team, even except, well, maybe not the Jags and the Jets, but almost every team that's 6-10 or better has a game or two like that every year where they look like world beaters. But, you know, that was the one game where it felt like the Bucs played their best football of the year. So 1-4 against division leaders, 7-1 against the rest. The one loss being the loss in Chicago on that Thursday night game a couple months back. And that's, to me, that feels like about right for the Bucs because they're better than all those teams. Are they the Chiefs? Not quite. Are they the Saints? They haven't proven they are. The Rams game, I think they could have won that. And if they played the Rams again, I think they could. I feel like they're pretty even with the Rams. And the Seahawks, for that matter, who they're contending with for a wild card spot. But that could swap back to the Rams if the Seahawks overtake the Rams in the NFC West. So, basically what I'm saying is everybody needs to kind of just remember that middle line. I say this a lot. You know, it's never as good as you feel like it is. It's never as bad as you feel like it is. And this week, for sure, it is not as good as a lot of people feel like it is. But it was enough, and they got it done against a Vikings team who really had to have that one. Now, as far as tiebreakers in the playoffs go, they have pretty much put Minnesota away one-on-one because they've got the head-to-head win and the tiebreaker and a two-game lead. But there's still the possibility of a three-way tie. And if there's a three-way wild card tie, let's say at 9-7 between the Cardinals, the Vikings, and the Bucks are actually the odd team out in that scenario because of the three-way tie, meaning the head-to-head doesn't matter with Minnesota, and it would go to conference record instead, in which the Cardinals and the Vikings would be a game better than the Bucks. So the Bucks could still miss the playoffs while Minnesota makes it. You can't completely cross Minnesota off if you're looking at the standings like I like to do every Monday or Tuesday morning and look at the wild card race. They're still now here's the scenario this week. There's only one scenario where the Bucks clinch. Bucks win and Minnesota and Chicago tie. Bucks are in the playoffs. And that has to do with, again, eliminating the possibility of that three-way tiebreaker and some other things. But even Minnesota losing wouldn't outright clinch it because of that possible three-way thing. We'll talk more about that in week 16 and 17. As for week 15 right now, same as I said with Minnesota, if the Bucs can't get it done against the Falcons and Lions here and at least go 2-1 in those three, we were wasting our time all along. But we said last week, this is an if-you-are-what-you-say-you-are type game. I mean, all these hopes and aspirations we have, and we can't beat Minnesota at home coming off a bye week, you know, it wouldn't have made any sense. But they did. They did their job. And, you know, looking back at that game, obviously the first thing, it was great to see Scotty Miller, right? 48-yard touchdown. We talked about him on the show last week. We talked about how he was leading the Buccaneers in average completion or average reception distance. I mean, he's up there in the teens by far, and this didn't do anything to hurt it with the 48-yarder. By far the best on the team. And yet, you know, Scotty Miller, maybe you've read it by now, but I'll give you a second to guess if you haven't read it. How many snaps do you think Scotty Miller played? And he caught that touchdown early in the game. It wasn't like some thing that happened late in the game where, oh man, we didn't realize this. How many snaps did Scotty Miller play? He caught a 48-yard touchdown in the first half. And what did he get rewarded with? Five snaps. He played five snaps. And when the Buccaneers signed Antonio Bryant, one of the things I said on the show, and I'm not, Antonio Bryant has not done anything wrong. He hasn't exactly lit the world on fire, but he hasn't done anything wrong. He hasn't been a distraction as far as we know. He's made a few plays, mostly in short and intermediate routes. He hasn't been a deep threat much, but I mean, I'm not blaming Antonio Bryant for any of this. But what did I say? I said, you know, this is a curious move. I get going all in. You're trying to win the Super Bowl, but is more necessarily better at this point with all the weapons the Bucs have. I said, if you're Mike Evans, if you're Chris Godwin, aren't you thinking, well, I mean, there's only one ball to go around. You can only have so many receivers, and aren't those guys thinking, well, this is less for me? If you're Scotty Miller, Scotty Miller was really classy when the Bucs signed Antonio Brown, and he was one of the guys saying, I can't wait for him to get here, can't wait to learn from him, going to be really cool having a guy like that, blah, 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 blah. And I said, there's no way Scotty Miller really believes that. He's saying the right thing because he's a classy guy, but he should be more upset than anybody. No, nobody who does a job wants to have more people who do that job be brought into the fold. Why would you? It makes you more expendable. It makes you less important. And there's less reps available for you to do the thing that you do. I mean, I used to work. Everybody's had a job somewhere. And I remember working in radio. And every time someone would quit or get fired, I'd be like, okay, cool, that's probably a good thing, because, you know, it's more airtime. And if they bring new people in, okay, that's less airtime. It didn't have anything to do with the people. Friends are not good people. But yeah, I mean, right? It's just common sense, you know? So Scotty Miller has been marginalized above anybody else since bringing in Antonio Brown. He had only been targeted two times in the three prior games. That's targeted, you know, those Rams games, the Chiefs game, all that. And then he goes out and catches a 48-yard touchdown on Sunday and still only gets five snaps total. And he probably, not probably, he is the best deep ball connector with Tom Brady that we have on the team, even better than Mike Evans and even better than Antonio Brown, certainly, who hasn't really been doing that. And we all want to throw it down the field all over the place, all over the time, and we're not using him. So I really wonder how much better the Bucs are having Antonio Brown. And I say that 100% not meaning it in a way to criticize Antonio Brown, because I don't think he's done anything wrong. But it was just one of the things that jumped out at me on Sunday when the Bucs, you know, Scotty Miller made that play, gave the Bucs a 7-6 lead, and it was like, oh man, here we go. What did I say? Scotty Miller, baby! And I'm like watching the rest of the game thinking, yeah, he was barely out there. He only goes out there when they run four wides, which is rare. And that doesn't appear to be changing, but I think the Bucs need to rethink how they use him. And, you know, to me, Tom Brady, I don't know if Tom Brady, how much he talks about this with Byron Leftwich or how much he talks about it with Bruce Arians, but, Scotty Miller was one of those guys going way back into the offseason when COVID had everything completely shut down and the Buccaneers were over at Berkeley Prep High School over there and running routes on their field and just kind of doing 7-on-7 and just getting work in any way they could. And Scotty Miller started developing that connection with Brady then. And he's one of the guys. I mean, he was there that whole time. And you can see it. I mean, he's a legitimate deep threat for them and on a team that's supposed to love throwing it deep. I would like to see him get more snaps. I'm just nitpicking, but that was one of the things that stood out. Did want to mention the offense. Every week we want to mention the offensive line because I always used to just criticize the offensive line when they had a bad game, and I wouldn't say anything when they had a good game. Offensive line did a great job, and not just for this game, but kind of a season recognition thing. We need to step back and appreciate what the offensive line has done. Donovan Smith, if you look at all the sacks they've allowed 9. Donovan Smith's allowed 5. Marpet and Kappa have not allowed a sack, either one of them, at all. Ryan Jensen's allowed three and Wirfs is allowed one. And Wirfs is a freaking all-pro this that we drafted because he was the only guy left. That's not why we drafted him. I think the Bucks would have drafted him anyway if they had been picking higher. But remember that whole thing with the offensive tackles and there were four of them and, oh, are they going to last? Can we get any one of them? We'll be happy just to get one. And Wirfs was my favorite. But, you know, Jedrick Wills has been good. Wills has been good. It was Mekhi Becton, you know. And Andrew Thomas has had injury issues early in the year with the Giants and things like that. But, I mean, Wirfs is clearly, if they redrafted right now, Wirfs wouldn't just be the first one of those guys taking. He might be one of the top, you know, three or four guys overall, two or three guys overall. He's a stud, and that just looks better and better every week. So, great job by the offensive line, and great job by the Buccaneers in general. Again, I know that they missed three field goals. I know they didn't play well, the Vikings I'm talking about. But it really could not possibly matter less at this point. So you get an Atlanta team now coming in this weekend, Sunday, 1 p.m. Let's look at the injury report because it looks pretty okay for the Buccaneers. If you're looking at Jamel Dean, and I am doing this show, by the way, it's 11 a.m. on Thursday, so I haven't seen the Thursday practice report yet. This is all based on Wednesday. But if you're looking at Jamel Dean, he was limited yesterday with his groin, so at least he was out there, and he's looking like he's closer to being back. And the only other one is Ronald Jones. And Ronald Jones, kind of the same thing Godwin had. They're looking at his finger, you know, with the pins and all that, if they're going to have to do that or not. And then they're going to get out there and start catching passes, and they're going to see what they can do. Falcons, of course, Ricardo Allen. Julio Jones didn't practice on Wednesday. Jones has that hamstring thing. We'll know more today. As far as what happens in the Thursday practice about the availability of those guys. But that's, I mean, I'm not even worried about it. It shouldn't even matter. Bucks should worry about themselves, go do their thing, and they should be able to beat a team like this. They are coming off, are the Falcons, losses to the Saints and Chargers, both close. I would prefer that be different. I would prefer that they had won that Chargers game, but they went Falcons on it, which the Chargers have done so many times, so the Chargers kind of got reverse chargered there. And yet, this is a 4-9 team and a team that the Bucks need. And honestly, this is the one game on the road against Atlanta. And I told you before in the show, if they split the two against Atlanta and beat Detroit, that's 10-6. And I guess I'd take that. So, you know, if the Bucks do lose on Sunday, everybody's going to feel like the sky's falling again. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to let the entire final three games play out. But I really do expect 2-1 or better. I guess I should rephrase what I said, though, because if I gave you right 2-1 right now, if I said the Bucks will go 2-1, you can lock that in risk-free, would you take it? What I'm really asking you is, would you take 2-1 versus not knowing what they're going to be, just letting it play out? And so I think I should change that. I wouldn't take 2-1 because I'm pretty confident they can go 2-1 without having it need to be locked in. But I think the chances of them going 3-0 are much better than them going 1-2. So I think I would not take 2-1. If you said I could seal up 2-1 right now and just take it and run, I'd change what I said. I would pass on that. I'd hold out to see if they could go 3-0. Because I think they ought to be able to do that. But it'll be interesting either way. Raheem Morris, it'll be him head coaching against the Buccaneers for the first time since he was the Bucs head coach. And just a quick little thing about Raheem Morris. Because I always liked Raheem Morris. And you have to remember back to that weird period the Bucs went through. You know, the Bucs won the Super Bowl in 2002. And all was right with the world. Then we had John Gruden as our head coach. He was the wonder boy. This was amazing. This was the guy. We finally found him. We got the great combination of coach and team. And it's just going to be gangbusters for years to come. And then the Bucs kind of just middled around those next few years. They did win the division in 05 and 07. And then in 08, they went 9-2 to start out. And it was like, okay, here we go. You know, we're right back on the horse, baby. Playoffs, here we come. Third time in 4 years. And then they lost five in a row to end 2008 and go 9-7. And even then, I was very surprised. Do you guys remember that? Like 2008, that five-game losing streak to end the year after being 9-2 and then Gruden getting fired a little bit later? And I remember being genuinely stunned. I was like, wow. Like, I did not think they were going to fire Gruden. And he did miss the playoffs, and he hadn't won a playoff game since the Super Bowl, which is still true, of course. But I remember that was a big shocker. So then, before they fired Gruden, Monty Kiffin had already said he was going to retire or move on. Not retire. He was going to move on and coach with his son. And so it was like, hey, Ra, you want to be the defensive coordinator? Absolutely. So he was going to be the defensive coordinator under Gruden for 2009. And then, of course, after 2008 and Gruden got fired, it was like 2 weeks, I think, after they had worked it out that he was going to be defensive coordinator, they called him back. And I think if I'm – and the Joes would know this, and maybe some of you guys would know this, but I think the story goes Raheem Morris was getting a haircut or something when he got the call to go over to One Buck Place. And again, he's been defensive coordinator for 2 weeks. So he hasn't actually been defensive coordinator. He's going to be the defensive coordinator when Kiffin leaves. And they call him up. He's getting a haircut. And they say, hey, come over to One Buck Place. And they say, hey, you want to be the head coach instead? I know we just hired you as DC, but how about head coach? And he was young. You know, he was really young. And so he took the job. 2009 was a tough year, introductory year, 3-13. Then 2010 happened. Josh Freeman, the starter. The Bucs went 10-6, amazingly. I'll never forget them losing that Lions game in Week 16 on one of the worst offensive pass interference calls you'll ever see against Kellen Winslow that the league even admitted was wrong. Like the next week, they said, wow, we messed that up. And that cost the Bucs a win. They would have been 11-5. And guess what? The Bucs finished 10-6 in 2010. Still one of the weirdest Bucs seasons I can remember. And they missed the playoffs on a tiebreaker. I think it was like division win. It wasn't even, not division wins. I think it was conference record. And it wasn't even head-to-head against Green Bay. And Green Bay got into the playoffs at 10-6 instead of the Bucs with the same record. And Green Bay won the Super Bowl. And I'm not saying the Bucs would have won the Super Bowl that year with Josh Freeman, you know, a rookie starting quarterback, all that stuff. But I will tell you this. It's amazing how the fate of things, like how different so many things would have been. If they don't make that call against Kellen Winslow, and if you go on YouTube, you can probably see it. I think it's still on YouTube. It was an atrocious offensive pass interference call. If they don't make that call, the Bucs are 11-5. Green Bay never goes to the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers still hasn't won a Super Bowl. I don't know who would have won it that year. Like I said, I don't think the Bucs would have won necessarily, but it wouldn't have been Green Bay because Green Bay wouldn't have been in there. That's how fine the line is in the NFL. And so even though they missed the playoffs, it was still like, hey, cool, rah, we got our guy. This young guy turns it around. A 7-win improvement from 2009 to 2010. In 2010, Raheem Morris also became the first coach in the modern era, and I think this still might be true. But at the time, he became the first coach in the modern era to start at least 10 rookies and finish with a winning record. No one had ever done that since like the Super Bowl era. And it was like, all right, here we go. In 2011, they get off to a 4-2 start. And then they just lost 10 straight games to end 2011. And they just lose. They were getting beat like 37-9, 45-14. They were getting just firebombed every single Sunday. I remember in 2011, I was working over at 620. I was doing the Bucs post-game show, like the post-game show after the official network post-game show that was on, then I would be on. And so I was the one that like actually took calls every afternoon on Sundays. The Bucs fans would call in, and usually they'd be drowning their sorrows. And I was trying to be the voice of reason. Like I remember they lost a couple. They'd go in from 4-2 to 4-5, and I'm never fire this guy person. That was never my personality. Like with Raheem Morris, every Sunday it'd be another just embarrassing loss, and I'd come in, I'd say, "Well, you know, we have to look at the big picture here, and you know, there's a lot of guys on this team who aren't pulling their weight. I'm not sure how great the locker room is right now." And week after week after week, it just came worse and worse. And they were running all over Ra. They were taking advantage of him. That was not a good group of guys for him to be coaching at that point in his coaching career. As young as he was, they needed some other, you know, basically like older guys like they have now, like with Brady, that type of thing. They needed something like that. But the inmates were running the asylum, as Ira Kaufman said back then. And it spiraled downward. And by the end of the season, I remember coming in to do that post-game show. And my son had just been born. And a couple times, my son was born that September, a couple times my wife was out. And I had my son in the little carrier, like sitting at my feet in the studio, like trying to keep him quiet while I did the post game show, and people calling in just so upset, and just the usual post game stuff when the home team loses. And finally, by like week 14 or 15, I said, guys, like, I'm not fire raw person. I'm not that person. But I don't see what else they can. It's not him, but he's the one thing you can make an immediate. It didn't matter. They did fire him, but of course, the Bucks were just getting started on a run of incompetence that would last the better part of a decade. And so he went back into the ranks of assistant coaches. He's done a good job. He's getting another chance now with Atlanta. They have improved since he took over for Dan Quinn. And I'm saying all this because these are not going to be easy games. I mean, I'm not penciling in two wins automatically. I think they should definitely win at least one of them, if not both of them. They should definitely beat the Lions. But it's not like you don't need to watch the game on Sunday. The Falcons are going to be different, especially coming off two losses the way they are. I'm just saying it's not a gimme. Not that any game in the NFL is a gimme, but these are not going to be gimmies. I think the Detroit game should be a gimme, just for context, but I don't think either of the Atlanta games will be, at least certainly not the one this week up there in Atlanta. Now, looking at the matchups in the game, there's a few things to like here, because if you look at, we talked about Julio Jones a little bit earlier in the show, and the official status on him, and again, I don't know what they've done in practice today. If he doesn't practice today, that's a pretty good indicator he's not going to be playing in the game on Sunday. But I'm doing my show in the morning time here, and I haven't seen the Falcons practice situation yet. So Matt Ryan, in the other games this season, and there's been five of them that Julio Jones has not played, only averages 5.5 yards per pass play. That's all passing attempts, 5.5 yards. It's not a good number. And Raheem Morris has said, after Jones aggravated his hamstring this past Sunday against the Chargers, that they're going to treat Jones as week to week the rest of the season. Now, week to week normally means a guy's going to miss some time. With only 3 weeks left, it might have just been something Morris said, I'm not sure. It would be nice if he didn't play. Again, if he plays, it's fine. I'm not saying that that hinges on everything, but yeah, if he doesn't play, that doesn't hurt, because that takes a weapon away from Matt Ryan, who I think has been overrated for a long time, by the way, and certainly without Julio Jones, he doesn't scare me, not even a little bit. On top of that, the Falcons' offensive line has two backups that'll be starting, right tackle Matt Ganeau and left guard Justin McCray. So at right tackle, Ganeau would be going up right across from Shaquille Barrett, who we mentioned before needs two sacks to get to 10. And Barrett is fourth in pass rushing efficiency in the league. And only a couple spots behind him is William Golston, who's sixth in the league in pass rushing efficiency, and that's who will be up across left guard Justin McCray, who's the other backup. He's surrendered three sacks in only a handful of pass blocking snaps in his time in there. So I think he's got Golston's got a good matchup against him. So you combine no Julio Jones and a couple of offensive line starters, and this should be a good chance for the Buccaneer defense to chow a little bit. And then meanwhile, on the offensive side of the ball, I think that, you know, Grady Jarrett on their defensive front, he's obviously good, a pro bowler. But aside from him, nothing about the Falcons up front scares me. And this is always the first things I look at with any game, is up front on both sides of the ball. And then, I didn't mention one thing. I did forget to mention in all these injuries that our entire kicking battery is on the COVID list. You guys might have heard about that, but I left that part out before. But yeah, suck up the place kicker, Bradley Pinion the punter, and Zach Treiner the long snapper, three guys who obviously practice together a lot or in close proximity a lot or in meetings a lot. All three of those guys are on the COVID list. Now, I don't think that changes anything about the game. Plus, they might still play. It's just like could be a contact tracing thing. If they test negative, they're good to go. But I'm just saying, if they can't go, the Bucs do have a kicker on their practice squad, Greg Joseph, who they've been protecting every Tuesday and in the event of something like this happening. So he can kick. They do have a Colquitt handy, the punter, Dustin Colquitt, of that family of punters. And he's a guy who they would use if they need to as the emergency punter. Same thing with the long snapper. It's a fellow Jesuit grad, Garrison Sanborn, who was the long snapper for the Bucs for a couple years and then went on to Buffalo. He's back living in Tampa, and supposedly he's getting tested for COVID and going through all the protocols so that he can be ready to go if they need him. So you can also it's not that big of a deal. I know we think it's the biggest deal in the world. Do what that high school coach in Arkansas does, where he doesn't do anything but kickoffs, and even those, he onsides every single one. Doesn't punt, doesn't kick field goals, goes for every fourth down. He's been to multiple state championships. It really isn't that big of a deal. Go for two after the touchdowns. If you make half of them, it's the same number of points you would have had anyway. Not that I'm trying to demean the importance of kickers. It certainly helped us when the other guys were weak at kicker this past weekend. But either way, it does need to be mentioned, and I kind of left that out when I was talking about Jamel Dean and Ronald Jones, and yeah, the entire special teams kicking battery as well. Email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay, BobbyGameDay. Wanted to mention a couple of other things from around the league as well, and this was some news that I saw yesterday, which I thought was pretty cool, and people have a lot of jokes and stuff, but the wild card weekend playoffs, you know, it's going to be three games each day instead of two because there's three or seven total teams in each conference now making the playoffs instead of six. So now you've got that extra game, 2 versus 7, whereas two used to have a bye. And I'm not sure exactly what the schedule is going to look like. Is it going to be like noon or 1, then a 4 p.m., then an 8 p.m. both days, Saturday and Sunday? I think that's what they're doing. They're not messing around with the days. It's still just Saturday and Sunday. So the late afternoon game on Sunday, which I'm assuming is an AFC game because it's on CBS, although the extra two games, it was NBC and CBS that bid on them and won the bid. So I don't know if it's bound by conference or if CBS could air an NFC game. I really don't know. But Nickelodeon's going to have the game. Not just Nickelodeon, it's still going to be on CBS too. But they're trying to get kids involved, so there was a story about what they're planning on doing. And basically it says, with the NFL expanding its postseason this year with two additional wildcard games, part of CBS's pitch to the NFL was that it will televise the late afternoon game on January 10th on both CBS regular and Nickelodeon. And they revealed the details of that production this week. So what they're going to do, it's, you know, the score box on the bottom will probably have like kid-looking type graphics. It'll still say the score and everything. The cameras and everything will be the same. You may have seen a little clip on YouTube where they threw some SpongeBob animations into the uprights and, you know, put some googly eyes on some of the players. They'll do stuff like that, like on replays, going to break and things like that. But the regular gameplay will be shown pretty much the same from what I understand, with just a little bit of a kid twist on it. And I think it's great, by the way. And I think I might flip over to this a few times during whatever that game ends up being. I don't think it'll be the Buck game, but I guess it could be, assuming the Bucks are in. But no matter who it is, I think I'd be interested to check that out. And I haven't watched Nickelodeon in years. In fact, and I have two kids. I have a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old, soon to be 6-year-old. And I told my wife about this the other day, and her first response was, kids still watch Nickelodeon? Because I watched Nickelodeon a ton in the 80s, mainly like the late 80s, I think a little bit into the early 90s, but by then I was starting to grow out of it. And it was huge back then, like Nickelodeon was the thing. You can't do that on television. How many people in this listening audience, which may not be that big to begin with, but whoever is listening, what percentage of people know what You Can't Do That on Television is? It you know, you got to be probably in your late 30s, maybe early 40s, somewhere in that window, and maybe you know. But even late 30s is starting to get. I think maybe people in their around their early 40s. I love that show. That show was hilarious. And if you go on YouTube, you can see some old clips. And it's probably not as funny now when you're in your 40s as it was when you were like 9. But it's still pretty good, honestly. And it was these Canadian kids. It was like a local like public access like Canadian show or something. And Nickelodeon picked it up in the late 80s. And it ended up being like a flagship show on Nickelodeon. But I remember that. Of course, we all remember Double Dare with Mark Summers. What was another one? Oh, Out of Control. Remember a young Dave Coulier hosting that show with Diz and Herne Burford? Anybody? I mean, are 5 people listening picking up on this? I don't know. But nowadays, the way it is, like my kids don't watch, they don't even know what Nickelodeon is. And I don't even know what's on Nickelodeon. And the reason, I mean, it's not like I keep them away from Nickelodeon, but my kids, you know, we have smart TVs now. So what do my kids do and what do your kids probably do? They watch YouTube. Like my kids watch everything on YouTube because you can put YouTube up on the big screen. You don't just have to do it on your computer. So they watch Dude Perfect. They watch this thing called Ratatat, which is like some cartoon from India that doesn't even have words. They watch Coyote Peterson, Breaking Trail, the guy that gets bit and stung by wasps and stuff and writhes around on the ground in agony. That's what my kids are into nowadays. And, oh, that's fine. I mean, I limit it, but I let them watch some of it. But I'm saying they don't even have any idea what's going on Nickelodeon. And I wonder how many kids watch Nickelodeon now. I don't think any of their friends do either. But I think it'll be fun to see a football game on it and see what that's like. Ian Eagle's kid, who's a broadcaster in his own right, is going to be doing it with Nate Burleson. And I'm sure, you know, there'll be some fun stuff. Remember on You Can't Do That on Television how they would slime you if you said, I don't know, and then they dropped the green slime? You guys remember that, right? Or if you said water, they dumped the water? No? Maybe a few people. Anyway, that was something I thought was interesting. And, you know, when we get to Wild Card Weekend, maybe we can talk more about that if the Bucks land in that slot. But we'll see. So in any event, Bucks Falcons on Sunday. It's weird right now with this time of year because we got Saturday NFL games too. Remember, this is supposed to be the time of year when college football is done. So all this scheduling was done before we knew how COVID was going to affect things. So even though we've got the SEC championship game, Florida and Alabama at 8 o'clock on Saturday night, we've got conference championship games all day, the Big Ten, the ACC, all that stuff. It's a huge day in college football, yet there's going to be NFL going up against that, which there wasn't going to be originally because nobody thought college football would still be going on right now. But let me look at the schedule here because I know the Saturday games, the Thursday night game tonight is Chargers-Raiders. And that may have already been played by the time you listen to this, if you're listening to it on Friday or later. But then we've got Bills at Broncos on Saturday afternoon at 4:30. And we got Panthers at Packers Saturday night, which I am a 100% full-throated endorser of Saturday NFL games when college football season ends. It's always good. There should never be a Saturday without football once you hit August, or, you know, then that should be it all the way through the Super Bowl, in my opinion. So we got those two games, and then, of course, the Bucks and Falcons are on Sunday at 1. Then the Bucks go in the Saturday slot next weekend. Should be a fun weekend of football. Should be something that keeps everybody held over, no matter who you are or where you are or what you're doing this weekend. So between college and pro, I'm looking forward to it. Whatever you're doing, though, be safe and have fun. Have a great weekend. I want to thank the Joes who always give me this platform. This is the number one place anywhere on the internet for Bucks coverage. And to be able to do the show with them instead of just doing it on my own is 1,000 times better. As always, thanks to them. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, our sponsor. Thanks to all of you. Have a great weekend. Have fun. Be safe. And I will talk to you next week after the Bucks hopefully beat the Falcons. And after we are hopefully talking about a 9-5 football team. But until then, that has been the Free Stretch for week 15 in the National Football League. Take care of yourselves, and I'll talk to you next week. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.